No holds barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Hey, welcome back to True Thirst Radio, folks. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. Tell you what, we got a call here on the line, Roger in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the show, Roger.
Yes, thanks, gentlemen. I'd like to ask two reasonably unconnected questions, if you please. Mr. Perkins, first, do you think it's possible that in terms of, they're both in the mold of, as we all should have heard, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Do you think it's possible, without necessarily fixating on the individual, but for, say, somebody like a David Rockefeller, you know, in his memoirs book, he even cast, interestingly, I forget the exact line, but he cast it in the mold, and then we come back home and deliver our foreign policy to the American people. In other words, we're not really carving out, despite all this democratic mumbo-jumbo, it's never has anything to do with the grassroots little folk, but it gets delivered to them from on high, Mount Olympus. But do you think it's possible in terms of a person like that, if you use that fancy term, epistemological self-consciousness, that they actually believe they're doing good, or do you think there has to be a consciousness that it's more has to do with a grab for power, a lust for power?
Well, Roger, it's a very good question. I don't think there's any single answer to that. I think that I've met a lot of people in the World Bank and other organizations that are doing some pretty bad things, but people who believe they're doing the right thing, who are there, want to do the right thing. And go into denial. I was one of those people for a while.
But you were just sort of the bag man for the Rockefeller types. You weren't the prime mover, right?
Right. And that's the point I was just about to make. I think at the very top, these people absolutely do know. I think that the people who run our big organizations understand very well what they're doing, and they may justify it on the grounds that they really believe that. The second coming is coming, or for religious purposes or whatever, we've got to get rid of this group or that group. But, you know, that's tremendous bigotry. And I think at the very top, they have a very, very strong comprehension of what's going on, regardless of the rhetoric that they use. None of this is about promoting democracy. We're very happy to overthrow democratic leaders when they do things that we don't like, and we're very happy to support terrible, brutal dictators when they do things that the corporatocracy and the big corporations do like.
Well, the statement that the caller made reference to, it's from Rockefeller's 2002 book, Memoirs, in which he actually admits that, he says, for those who accuse my family and I of conspiring with other groups around the world to create a world system of government, to those charges I answer guilty, and I'm proud of it. So yep. There you go. Just like you said, at the top, they do know, and they don't care. They're proud of it.
Yeah, they're proud of it, and why are they proud of it? You know, because it's created vast fortunes for them, and they want to convince the rest of us that it's created a great world for all of us. And yet, as we look around the world, we see that every single day about 50,000 people die of starvation or hunger-related diseases. We see that a very small percentage of the world's population is over-consuming and over-polluting. That's us. And we see that we've created a world that is not sustainable or stable or peaceful, and we must turn that around for the sake of ourselves and our kids.
They're like the spoiled brat bully on the block who has gotten everything on a silver platter they've ever asked for, and now they, you know, it's not enough, so they go and steal everybody's bike in the neighborhood, and because of the big bully, they beat anybody up if they say anything. And, you know, they just want to dominate,
The bully analogy is a great one, Charles, and, you know, in Secret History, I talk about how optimistic I am that we can turn this around. And one of the reasons I am is because this is really driven by the big corporations more than anything else. The David Rockefellers of the world, more than the politicians. I mean, the big corporations, the David Rockefellers basically finance all our political campaigns.
They own the politicians.
Yeah, the politicians are beholden to them, as is the media. But what we find is that if we kick a bully in the shins, I found this out in third grade, if you kick a bully in the shins, you fight back, usually the bully, you know, not only stops picking on you, but usually becomes your ally. And we've in fact found that when we insist that corporations do things like clean up rivers or stop using aerosol cans as destroying the ozone layer or employ more minority peoples or get rid of trans fats in their food or antibiotics in chickens, which Tyson just announced 3 days ago they were going to do because we've demanded it, we the people. When we start making these demands and we kick the bully in the shin, we see that it responds. It follows what we want and in fact can become our ally. And now I think we just need to rev this up a notch, not just go after the antibiotics and the aerosol cans, but also insist that these corporations become good citizens, insist that their primary goal not be to make a few rich people a lot richer, but instead to create a better world for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mr. Perkins, my second and last question, and I've only begun to peer within the pages of your book, but my other favorite catchphrase is there may be nothing deadlier than philanthropy. And if you cover it in your book or otherwise had any observations as to how ostensible philanthropy is in fact used to consolidate the reins of power in a less transparent manner.
Yes, that certainly can be the case. And as I talk about in the book, a number of NGOs, nonprofit organizations working in places like Africa that are really collaborators with the corporatocracy. And that certainly can happen, and we need to be aware of that and watch out for it. On the other hand, I also talk in the book about a lot of nonprofit organizations that have been real agents of change, real catalysts at bringing things around. So both cases are true, and we just need to be vigilant and support those organizations that are really out there working to help make this a better world for us and our kids, and come down hard on the organizations that are just using that as a smoke screen and, in fact, are supporting the corporatocracy.
God bless you all.
Likewise.
Okay, was that it there in Pennsylvania? I think you hung up.
I think you finished.
Yeah, I think you... Okay, thanks a lot. That was Roger. I wanted to... have you elaborate a little bit on your new book, of course. I was thumbing through it. Haven't had time to really sit down cover to cover yet. I was just breezing through it, you know, in preparation for the show.
It's only been out a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and it's really thick. I want to really sit down and get have a chance to absorb it. I just breezed through it, you know, to get a feel for it. But very, very good stuff in there. One chapter in particular that caught my interest. This is something that I've been very suspicious of. And you confirmed it, the profiteering that went on in the wake of this, the 2004 tsunami.
It's a pretty horrendous thing, but it's always true that foreign aid is almost never altruistic. It may appear that way, but it's almost always used to serve the interests of the big corporations. And what happened during that tsunami that hit Asia a couple of years back is typical. In that at the very beginning, a small amount of foreign aid does go in and is used altruistically to bring water in, to bring tents, to bring food in for people. And then we hear about the billions of dollars that have been set aside to help these areas rebuild themselves. What we don't hear is that most of those billions of dollars are going to end up in the hands of our corporations. So rather than using that money to help the small fisherman rebuild his fishing boat and small storage facilities, and rather than helping the mom-and-pop restaurants and hotels to rebuild after destruction, the money goes to big fishing companies, and it goes to big hotel chains and big restaurant chains, the international ones.
They really don't need the help.
No, they don't need the help, and the countries don't need them there. They were doing great before the tsunami, or maybe not great, but these small mom-and-pop organizations were getting along, and people were living off these. Families were living good, wholesome, healthy lives. Suddenly that's been wiped out, and we go in with aid that makes it even worse for these people. But most Americans don't understand that we're doing that. And, of course, the reconstruction is all done by the big U.S. corporations, the Bechtels and Halliburton.
Unbidded contracts. And, of course, the big corporations that set up business there now will enjoy a monopoly.
Yeah. And yet the average person in the United States believes that it takes great pride in the fact that his taxpayer dollars are going to helping the people that were devastated in this country. It's just, unfortunately, a lie. It doesn't happen that way for the most part. A little bit of it does at the very beginning.
Some will justify and say, well, it might not be a good thing that we're doing, but at least it's helping our economy here. It's helping people. No, it isn't. That's the whole point. All the money's being hoarded in their pockets, and our jobs are getting shipped over to India and China.
Well, yes, and you know, the economic hitmen are coming back to roost in the United States. We're losing our pensions and our health insurance policies and our Social Security and our Medicare. We're being saddled with a lot more debt. We're being coerced into taking it. I remember when I was first an economic hitman in the 70s, I was making pretty good money. I was in my early 20s. I couldn't get a credit card. Now my daughter, when she turned 18, was still in high school. She was swamped with credit cards because it gets us in this servitude to debt so that we're beholden, so we got to go out and work for the corporation so we can pay off our debt. Increasingly, the fact that we've gone against our principles overseas and turned a blind eye to what our leaders have been doing in other countries is now coming back to roost here in the United States and is very detrimental to us. Another reason,
as individuals, we're becoming targets of this system.
Yeah, and you know, we've got the Patriot Act. Every time you go through, I'm about to get on an airplane. Yeah, I'm going to be hassled. It's going to be very, very difficult. And yet, the real threat to our national security is really the policies that we're conducting overseas that create hatred and anger. It's not, for the most part, people walking through our airports. And if a terrorist really wanted to do something in this country at this point, you know, the big targets are the tank farms where all this gasoline is stored and nuclear power plants, things like that. The likelihood of another airplane incident is pretty small. You know, terrorists don't usually repeat themselves.
I mean, all they got to do is walk across the Mexican border. They'll have the red carpet rolled out for them there.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, American citizens are getting treated like potential terrorists, but the real potential terrorists coming across the border, I mean, not everybody coming across the border is a terrorist, you know what I'm saying, but anybody who wants to can easily come across, you know, a real legitimate terrorist could easily come across the Mexican border.
Well,
it's laughable.
Charles, I've met a lot of terrorists over the years, and quite a few came out of hiding and talked to me after confessions, and not one of them wants to be a terrorist. Now, I know there are fanatical terrorists around the world. There's a few of them, the leaders. But any movement like that cannot have a big grassroots following unless people are extremely upset, unhappy, frustrated, angry, filled with hatred. And so the best way to do away with terrorism is to do away with the root causes. The terrorists that I've met have been people who've been displaced from their lands because of the oil has destroyed their rainforests, or big hydroelectric plants have flooded their farmlands. These are desperate people. These are people who don't see any alternative. They don't want to be terrorists. They want to be back home with their families. They want to be on their farms.
What I always point out is you look at the poorest countries in the world, and they're ones that, for the most part, actually have the bulk of the world's richest resources. South African countries, that's where all your gold and diamond mines are. Brazil is loaded with rich mineral resources. Haiti has the blackest, richest agricultural croplands in the world, you know, black soil. And yet these are among the poorest countries. And how does that happen? Except by design.
Yeah, it's by design. Ecuador is a great example of tremendous amounts of oil. Bolivia with gas, and you know that's what economic hitmen do. We go in and we saddle these countries with huge amounts of debt. We impoverish them so that we later can go back in and get their oil or their gas or their diamonds or their coltan, which is in every computer and cell phone and only comes out of Congo, which we've exploited terribly. So 3 to 4 million people have died in Congo in the last decade because, you know, our computer and cell phone manufacturers want very, very cheap coltan. But this is creating a very, very dangerous world for us and for our offspring. And I think we need to understand that in order to have homeland security, we must comprehend that the homeland today is the entire world. It's a very small planet. You know, 9/11 taught us that. The conquistadores never had to worry about the Incas attacking Madrid. The French and the English didn't have to worry about their colonists in India and Africa attacking Paris and London. But after 9/11, we know that our cities are extremely vulnerable.
Right. Yeah, the immediate response after 9/11 was to, oh, let's get the bombs out and go have some fun. You know, I mean, you know, they never look at the, it's kind of like the pharmaceutical industry, you know, they only look at the, symptom, not the cause, you know. You got a headache, oh, take an aspirin. But never mind asking why you have a headache, you know.
Well, and it's, remember, it serves that purpose, because you and I may think that Iraq is a failure, and we may think that Vietnam was a failure, but in fact, if you happen to be a major stockholder, a multi-billionaire owning a stock in big corporations, you don't look at Vietnam as a failure, and certainly not Iraq as a failure. Your companies are making a tremendous amount of money in those wars. And so we, the people, are the ones who suffer from this. The corporatocracy, the people who run the big corporations, are doing very, very well as a result of these failures, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
And
right.
So we, you and I, we must insist that these things stop. We must insist that these corporations not profiteer from suffering around the world, whether it's tsunamis or wars.
The bulk of our national debt has come from the Pentagon and their contractors, you know.
Of course, yes.
You know, I think of people like Chavez. Here's a guy selling gas for, you know, 12 cents a gallon. It's cheaper than water down there in Argentina.
Venezuela.
Venezuela, yeah. And, you know, here's Bush now calling the CIA to beef up efforts down there. And they're trying to say that he's supporting Al-Qaeda. Oh, this is just getting just nonsensical, just totally ridiculous.
Well, it's interesting. Latin America, and I just came back from Nicaragua, Ecuador, and Bolivia. In fact, I spent New Year's Eve at the presidential palace in Bolivia with Evo Morales. And, a remarkable thing has happened. 8 countries in Latin America, representing over 80% of the population of South America, in the last elections have voted in the candidate who ran on a policy that said no more exploitation by foreign corporations. These are not anti-American presidents. They love our ideals. Most of their platforms are based upon our ideals of the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But they're not anti-American, but they are anti-exploitation by corporations.
Right.
And every one of these countries, up until fairly recently, was a puppet of ours. We through corruption and military might in some cases, and then through assassination of Allende, of Arbenz, of Roldos, of Torrijos, of Noriega, capture or assassination, we control these governments. And then now, in the last 10 years, the people in these countries have really risen up, and in the democratic process have voted in presidents who are standing up to us in a big way. And these countries have tremendous amounts of resources. As we, in Washington, the scuttlebutt is that we're going to have to get out of Iraq at some point, or at least reduce our presence significantly. And at that point, the whole Middle East may fall, and we become very, very dependent on Latin American oil from Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, and parts of Bolivia. We become increasingly dependent. And so, you know, we're having to accept these presidents that in the past we wouldn't have accepted, but we need to really...
It's sad. We could have maintained the position of being the dominant power in the world and been friends to all if we were treating people decently, but to exploit them and rape and pillage them, now we're suffering. You know, we stand to collapse.
We absolutely do, but I think we still have time to turn it around.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about that when we get back. Stick with us, folks.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Imagine if powerful technology existed to help your body neutralize pathogens, revitalize cells, and intensify your immune system. How do you think that might affect your wellness and longevity? One of the most powerful breakthroughs in electromedicine was the multi-wave oscillator created by Drs. Tesla and Lakovsky. More powerful and useful than Rife machines, Evenstar photonic multi-wave oscillators are designed to send trillions of life-enhancing frequencies deep into organic tissue to help eliminate chronic and acute wellness conditions at their source. Over the past 14 years, Evenstar users time and again report excellent results working with a wide range of wellness conditions. To learn why Evenstar may be your perfect wellness and longevity solution, visit evenstarforlife.com or call 888-333-5095. Serious wellness threats are on the rise. Don't you owe it to your family to explore this powerful technology today? Evenstarforlife.com, evenstarforlife.com, or 888-333-5095. That's 888-333-5095.
Attention, this is an RBN Financial News Bulletin. Have you ever wanted to get out of debt, maybe even make some of your debts disappear completely? If so, and you're an RBN listener, there is a very real chance you will be able to do it. Here is why. A new manual has just been published that reveals how you can get out of debt in 90 minutes without any loans or bankruptcy whatsoever. The insider secrets revealed allow you to get out of debt so fast and so completely that it makes some people feel like they're stealing, but they're not stealing. The secrets taught in the manual are 100% legal and 100% ethical. It's just that bankers, debt collectors, and credit card companies don't want you to know about these loopholes. Don't be a prisoner of debt. Go to outin90.com. That's www.outin90.com or call 877-327-0365. RBN listeners receive a free DVD with purchase.
Hey, we're back here on Two Thirds Radio. Just got a few more minutes left with John Perkins. Tell you what, John, why don't you tell us about some of the solutions that you're proposing and maybe give another plug for your two websites again.
Yes, well, Charles, in the book, in the Secret History of the American Empire, I have a long list of things that we all can do to contribute to a better world. But I think, you know, most important is for us all, you know, in summary, what we need to do is be very conscious when we vote, when we buy things, anything, and look toward how what we do, how our actions serve to create a more sustainable, peaceful, and stable world for future generations, and use that as the driving force, and then do these things that are listed in the book or take a selection of them that we best can do. You know, I think in the next presidential campaign that's coming up, we need to insist that every candidate talk about global warming and talk about exploitation in other countries, and what are we really going to do to get rid of the root causes of terrorism, not just how do we, you know, respond immediately with Band-Aids. The website's johnperkins.org, and everything's on there, places where I'll be speaking in the next few days in Colorado and California, and then in Florida and so forth, and also dreamchange.org, which is one of the nonprofits I founded, another nonprofit, pachamama.org, P-A-C-H-A-M-A-M-A. But if you go to johnperkins.org, that'll take you to all the others through links if you want. I'd really look forward to meeting some of your listeners at some of the venues where I speak, and I'd love to hear from them, the questions they ask, the statements they have to make.
Yeah, if anybody makes it, you're one of the John Perkins. Tell them you heard them on Truth Hurts. And definitely, guys, check out the websites. There are things that can be done, and I'll tell you, that old cop-out is really what it is. Oh, I'm just one person. What difference can I make? Actually, the very opposite of that is true. One person can make a heck of a lot of difference, sometimes more than a whole organization, a whole team of people.
When I grew up in rural New Hampshire, I had no idea that blacks in the United States, African Americans, had to ride on the back of the bus in certain places until Rosa Parks showed me. Who was she? You know, just a woman who sat at the front of a bus, and I had no idea that DDT was killing birds and fish in addition to mosquitoes until Rachel Carson's wrote Silent Spring. We all have tremendous ability to do amazing things. Sit on the front of a bus, you know, talk to your neighbors. Every time you buy something, every time you talk to someone, you're influencing them.
Yeah. I mean, you share something with someone and they share it with someone else, and you can literally be sharing stuff with thousands of people just talking to one person.
we have changed the world that way. And, you know, I think I mentioned earlier that the food company, Tyson's, the chicken company, had this big ad in the New York Times the other day saying that they were taking antibiotics out of all their chickens because of consumer insistence that they do so. We've had tremendous impact.
It's true. But they're not doing anything. Nothing's going to change. Yeah, I mean, they do. When they see them in the spotlight and there's all this negativity around them and they stand to lose profits, that's their ultimate most important agenda, then, yeah, they're going to back down. They're going to give in.
And I think ultimately most of the executives in these companies really ultimately want to do the right things. I mean, they don't want their kids to eat antibiotics. They don't want to see the ozone layer destroyed or the Florida flooded. But they're in a paradigm position where they feel that they have to maximize the bottom line or they'll lose their jobs. We need to tell them something different. When we send a message to these companies, there's so many organizations like Rainforest Action Network and Pachamama Alliance and Amnesty International, MoveOn.com are constantly putting these things in front of these people and basically sending the message to these corporations, listen, you got to do the right thing or we won't buy your products. We won't put up with it any longer. And a lot of huge corporations have folded in my lifetime, you know, huge ones. ITT, which overthrew Allende in Chile, basically, or backed the CIA coup, no longer really exists as a company.
Absolutely. Unfortunately, John, we've run out of time. Wish we had more time. Maybe we'll have you on again sometime. I know you're busy the rest of the summer pretty much, but maybe we'll have you on again in the fall.
I'd love it, Charles. Thanks for your great work. It's what keeps America going. It's freedom of the press is so important.
You bet. Thanks again. See you tomorrow, folks, with Chalmers Johnson.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of